Do not adjust your radio dial. You are tuned in to the Mark Order Podcast. Join the Mark Order.
You know what that means. Ryan is back, which means you have a hard out on our theme. Not the delicate way that Joe handles it, like a goddamn professional, when Ryan is being water boy for the Flyers, is what we decided was going on the past couple weeks. Ryan,
I wish.
Having you back is nice. Joe, having you back from the mountains is nice. How is that fresh mountain air, buddy?
It was very cold for a while. You know, being there with a record May snowstorm was fun. No Casa Bonita, though.
That happens. It happens to the best of us. AEW ran this like collision show at the mini golf complex on steroids thing. And Nick Nemeth was like, they should run a show at Casa Bonita. And I was like, they absolutely should run a show at Casa Bonita. But nice to have you back. Ryan, how are you doing with all your Philadelphia lore?
Good. I don't mind that my teams are out. One of them way overperformed. One of them fired their GM, which they needed to do. So I'm in a good place. And no team from the East in basketball is winning the championship. So it is what it is.
It's so hard because I love to troll Jeremy, but I'm very excited for him that his Thunder are probably going to, it looks like, I don't follow a lot of basketball, but it seems like Oklahoma City is going to steamroll right through again now.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't need to win again. They're
I'm not saying they need to, but they're going to.
It feels inevitable. They swept the Lakers, right?
Yes,
no Luka. I know, thanks. I'm basically a basketball genius, you guys. Thank you to everybody hanging out with us. Taylor Cannon, Pieces, Greg Cherry, Scott George, Big G in the chat. Thank you so much for joining us for tonight's AEW Dynamite post-show. Quick plug for myself. I was humping everybody earlier. It's how I'm spending my last night in my mid-20s. Because that is my age. I was on the hump with Sean Ross Sapp on Fightful. I also was on the True Heel Heat podcast with SP3 previewing Supercard of Honor. So it was nice to hang out with SP3, talk some ROH. We used to do that on a weekly basis. Not so much the case anymore because they still haven't really cared about that show even since bringing it back to Jacksonville, which is disappointing. But Supercard of Honor should be fun. They always show out for pay-per-views. I'm looking forward to it, but before we dive into anything, fellas, did you watch the one-hour collision at the golf course? I had so much fun watching this thing.
Didn't get a chance to see it.
No?
It's a must, especially for Ryan, because I don't know if you guys have picked up on the fact that Ryan is into some silly shit. But this was the silliest shit ever, but also really fun, and they made things count. Like, Mark Davis won the title from Jack Perry, which was really cool. I really liked a lot of what we got out of Pac and Darby, which you knew was going to be fun because you just knew Darby was going to do dumb shit at this venue. But definitely, definitely, definitely worth watching that. It's such an... I love our TV wrestling, man. Like... I know Rampage was, like, usually a pretty directionless hour, but, man, I love a good one-hour wrestling show. It's a great time. It goes so fast, especially when it's as ring-focused as AEW is. Like, I was like, there's a place for a one-hour wrestling show. I don't know if it's a Saturday morning gimmick. I don't know what the deal is, but I love a good one-hour wrestling show. So I would encourage you fellas to check that out because it was a good time.
Yeah, did anyone use a golf club?
Did anyone use a golf club? I don't think, like, as a weapon. I don't think, like, as a weapon. Did they?
Let down.
Yeah. Ricochet?
Oh, right, yeah. Of course. How could I forget? How could I forget? But it was... I that Pac and Darby match with him just getting yeeted into the sand trap was so funny, and then the spot that ended it, or almost ended it, with Darby going through the table was so much fun. So that was really good. Dunkzilla winning gold was really good. I had a blast, so go back and watch that. Also, shout out to everybody that wore their Argyle and stuff. Renee, there was some good gear choices. But yeah, not a ton in the world of AEW outside of that. We talked pretty extensively about the releases and the impact that those might have moving forward and all sorts of stuff already. So we will dive into this Dynamite, which opens with one of the funnier segments that I think we've seen in a while. We have Renee backstage with MJF, and she's like, "Are you really willing to put your hair on the line?" And then he just walks through a house of horrors of baldness. Like, this is just a hallway of bald employees. There's a Jonathan Silver appearance. They remembered he's employed. He actually gets a pretty decent pop in this. There's Ciampa. There is just referees and production crew in this. It is so, so, so funny. And MJF plays it deadly serious, which makes it all the more fun. I loved this little opener. It was kind of a fun thing that wove itself in and out throughout the night. I'll recap one other segment, but we'll save. You know what? Fuck it. Let's talk about all of it now. We have him approaching Don Callis as well, because Don Callis says, you have MJF gassing up to Kesha, and then he was like, "Man, I'm full of shit, but I need you to help me out. I can't lose my hair. I don't want to look ridiculous and bald." No offense, like you, Don. No offense. And then we do have our contract signing tonight after, not surprisingly, Darby retains. No interference from Okada, which I think the report was that he went to Japan to settle something up, so that's probably why this match switched to Takeshita in the first place. But we have a great match, which we'll talk about later, but MJF with his contract signing, Darby is bleeding from the mouth, just like the most disgusting, perfectly Darby visual ever. But he demands that MJF comes out and signs this hair versus title match for Double or Nothing. We get kind of a long promo here, but I liked MJF calling Darby a glorified stuntman who's burning the wick at both ends here. He talks about his 15 minutes of fame. He says there's a small part of him that's happy for him, but his legacy is going to be that he's a world champion three times by the age of 30. And Darby fires back and says, "I don't really give a shit about legacy. I give a shit about this moment right now." And at Double or Nothing, he's going to make MJF a bald-headed bitch, which puts MJF over the edge here to sign this contract. He tries to beat up Darby with the diamond ring, but Kevin Knight makes the save as Dynamite goes off air. So that's kind of our through line. We'll talk about the actual world title defense between Takeshita and Darby in a little bit, but what bookended the show was this story between MJF and Darby. Joe, we'll start with you. Your thoughts on this?
I appreciate the fact that they've taken a stipulation, which on a surface level seems like a silly stipulation that we have from early 1990s WWF, and sure, made it really personal for MJF because it fits his character of being that vain, where he's not that as much as he does his title. But what he said to Darby, I thought, was a lot of truths, a lot of things he said here on the show about Darby being a risk taker, Darby, doing other things outside of wrestling that sometimes look like he prioritizes over wanting to be a champion. In both instances, I thought it was really good back and forth.
Yeah, I agree. I thought this was a good... MJF, I feel like, is really good at this particular thing, like you said, of kind of bringing some of those real-world criticisms on screen and personifying them a little bit as a fan. But before we get to Ryan, I did also want to call out Tim McFowell's comment and reminder that I forgot about Andrade showing Max his luscious locks. Andrade was like, "How can I show him just the most hair on top of my head?" And it was very, very funny. It was not kempt. It was just, I want to rub my hair in your face, or the fact that I have it in your face. He also posted a selfie on Twitter with it of just like just having this ridiculous mane of hair. So funny. And of course that said, how you know MJF. But Ryan, your thoughts on what we got tonight out of MJF and Darby.
Oh, I loved MJF. Like you said, MJF walking in and all the bald guys just staring at him is one of my favorite things they've ever done. It was just very well done. I'm going to be honest with you. I kind of zoned out for the last few minutes because I discovered that there is a Big Bang Theory spinoff called Stuart Fails to Save the Universe, in which apparently the comic book shop owner sets off a device that leads to Armageddon. And it's like a sci-fi show that's a direct spinoff of Big Bang Theory. I don't know what's happening in this world, and I'm very confused. So how is wrestling making more sense than normal television? I don't know.
That's a good question. I can't think of anything that could be less my vibe than what you just described.
It's not my vibe either. I literally was in shock. I had to make sure like I wasn't looking up and pranked or that I didn't read it off like.
I heard Big Bang Theory was already out, but then I kept trying to listen and then it was like, it just kept going.
I mean, it's so on HBO Max, so there's relevance to AEW.
I mean, that's a stretch, but your thoughts on what you did see, I guess.
I saw it. I mean, I liked Max with all the balds. And then the Andrade.
Sure.
Here's the only part that bothered me. And I liked the whole segment with the contract signing up until he attacked Darby. And the only reason it bothered me is if you're Darby, you have to know that's coming.
Yeah, but I feel split on that because he is proving himself to be unkillable, but he did just go to war with Takeshita, right? I do like that he's a babyface that has a friend in his corner. That's way too rare. And it's not like a friend so much as someone who has a common enemy in MJF, right? But like, I did appreciate that much. Like that there was at least somebody in his corner here.
Oh yeah, no, I mean, there was a good part. Like I said, the most of it was great. It just didn't fit Darby to me to have Darby fall victim to the MJF walking around the table to attack him deal. Like everyone saw that coming.
Sure.
It's a very minor gripe. By no means am I saying it ruined the segment. I think the segment was very well done. Everything you guys said about how MJF mixes in real world stuff with wrestling. But now we have a problem though. This whole thing has led me to a big problem. What if MJF doesn't win? I mean, what if MJF doesn't lose? And we don't get to see him bald?
I mean, there's a lot of, like, Photoshops going on out there. So you can see him bald. We just can't see him authentically bald, which is a shame. Somebody making him bald in the infamous Rosie O'Donnell interview that he had was...
That was funny. But I just...
Absolutely killed me.
Now I want him to be part of the bald crew. Like...
I mean, a lot of his guys do seem like they belong that way. There's a lot of bald heels on this roster right now. But let's get back to the episode. I'm going to skip all around tonight. I do want to talk about... We can skip to... I'm hosting, so we're going to skip to Milo tonight.
My darling.
But we're going to talk about the Owen Hart brackets because they were revealed. It's going to be Jack Perry versus Mark Davis in a rematch. Samoa Joe versus Will Ospreay, Swerve versus Bandido, and Brody King versus Claudio. My guess is this is leading to Claudio versus Will Ospreay, but this could go a few different ways. I am intrigued by it. I was hoping it would be a little more robust than just these matchups, but they're good matchups to have. Kind of surprised Andrade isn't wormed in here just because I think he is a candidate for Wrestler of the Year so far. Like his return has been just so insane. But he doesn't maybe feel like he's been hovering around the world title picture so much this year and not getting his shot. But But yeah, no wild cards in this one. Definitely when you think of like the top talent of the company, a lot of these ring true. Like Jack Perry and Mark Davis might be considered upper mid card, but like Samoa Joe, Will Ospreay, Swerve, Bandito, Brody King, Claudio, like this is a meaty little bracket. I'm not mad about the choices. I gotta think it's Will Ospreay's to win though, going into Wembley, right?
Joe, I'll let you go first.
Yeah, I feel like it's telegraphed that way with going to Wembley. All this focus on building Ospreay up to be a title winner. And your call about Claudio and Will in the finals makes sense with, you know, that'll be his final test before he goes after the championship is, you know, beating one of the Death Riders and using what he did to them. I think it'll be fun. And yeah, and Joe and Ospreay in the first round, that's probably the one that got me most excited.
That's one that Will Ospreay has been calling for a bit too, because he's such an AJ Styles guy, and he was like, Samoa Joe was always like right there with AJ Styles when you think about like best matches and things like that. And he was like, to fight somebody that's in his orbit after being so inspired by his style, I think is a cool way to kind of pay homage in a sense. But I'm definitely looking forward to that match. I think it's going to be a bunch of fun. Ryan, your thoughts on our Owen bracket for the men here?
It's a fun bracket, in terms of you're going to have a lot of good matches. Of the two, the more predictable, I feel like, at least it reads as the more predictable, with, like you said, Ospreay going, Ospreay Joe type deal. But doesn't mean any of it's bad. Like Ospreay versus Claudio is going to be incredible. But of the two, it feels like the more predictable outcome.
Sure. Sure, and we're going to talk about that Wild Women's bracket in a minute, but since we were talking Ospreay and the Death Rider stuff here, this has been a really interesting storyline, so I want to talk about this vignette in the match that we got, because one, I think these vignettes are incredible, and two, Ace Austin is just showing out every time they give him an opportunity, and it makes me very happy, but we have this more serious backstage segment with Jon Moxley, and he's talking about, like, the freedom that Will Ospreay felt in way back in his Battle of the Super Junior days, and how he was flying like a bird, and he's like, you can still do that. Like, you just kind of have to get out of your own way and not think about the fact that you, like, can't feel your hand and not feel about, like, you have to be constantly protecting yourself, your reputation, your body, all these things. And instead kind of, like, give something and frames Will Ospreay as the bird of prey who needs to rediscover himself. I immediately thought of the Birds of War, of course, because how couldn't I? But these have been very affecting segments. Like, we so often get, like, what we got with Kenny Omega for the past year of, oh, that diverticulitis, we're going to attack him there over and over and over and over again. With Will Ospreay, like, that actually had consequences, and he didn't just, like, babyface power his way through it. Like, this is a really cool thing of, like, you're back, but Will Ospreay is going to be made as so back by the Death Riders. I also loved in this vignette that it ends with Jon Moxley being like, Wheeler! Wheeler Yuta, not even on screen, just getting shit on. But I popped at that. Jamie from Perio Magazine pointing out the Birds of Prey, Robbie and Will in the chat. Like, that was what I took away from it. Ryan, we'll start with you on this. I'm loving the sincerity behind these things. And I also love that, like, heel or face with the Death Riders, they have so returned to the mission of what they set out to be. Of, like, we can make you the most dangerous guy in the world because you already have this side of you. Let's bring out the rest of you and see what this can be like. Are you liking these as much as I am? Because this is one of the most interesting things in all of wrestling to me.
First of all, I'm not a big Birds of Prey fan. I'm more of a Birds of War fan.
Sure.
Give me Mac and Dennis. Let them win their matches.
Of course.
With their manager, the Trash Man. I love these vignettes. I will say, I don't think Ospreay's doing himself any favors. You know, he's doing that neck bridge tonight, and I've seen physical therapists saying that's, like, one of the worst things you can do for your neck. So, you know.
My physical
saying.
Therapist Taz says that it's a very good thing and that it's a Japanese technique. So.
Oh, I was going based off what Crowbar would say.
I mean, yes, Crowbar is actually a physical therapist who knows what he's talking about. But I'm just actively choosing to buy into whatever bullshit Taz is spewing about this.
That's fair. I mean, I do appreciate that they are trying to put logic behind everything he's doing. Like, hey, you know, the diverticulitis stuff never made sense because that's just not how that works.
Right. Like I'm hitting you in the void where your intestine used to be doesn't really like click in all that much.
It's not an open wound. Like, what are we doing here, guys? I want to say, and I know this would kind of plays into Ospreay's match that happens later, but I'm going to stick with it. They very easily could turn the Death Riders pure baby faces if they wanted to.
Sure.
When the Ops are coming out against Ospreay and the Death Riders music hits, there is a cheer that goes through that building. And then they look cool as fuck when they walk out.
They really... I feel like because there's an ethos with them that works. Like you can swing on the pendulum if you're true to yourself. Like it's kind of the Batman thing, right? Like he had a code of ethics that he operated by that he was ever true to, and he could be an anti-hero or a hero within that. So I feel like as long as you're consistent with that, which to me when they strayed from it is when the Death Riders were bad. Like, it felt like they got so far away of the original intent of the group. Like, I feel like the mission can be, you can swing it on a pendulum either way as long as you're true to it. But, Joe, what did you think of what we got out of this Death Riders segment? And then we'll get into the match that we got between Will Ospreay and Ace Austin.
Well, first of all, when you're talking about birds and flying away, my mind went to the first time, though.
Your mind went where? Sorry, I didn't hear it.
No, it's Rosado.
I'm like a bird. I want to fly a spray. I'm with you.
You changed the lyrics.
I did. I didn't think he'd be the first one to sing. I thought Ryan would be the first one.
I know. I'm shocked, too. Honestly.
I'm going to be honest with you. It was in my head. I've been ruined since I saw that Big Bang Theory spinoff. It has just ruined my night.
Ryan's not here. He's dissociating.
I think we could use a nice little montage of Ospreay training.
Sure.
I want a montage.
Even Rocky had a montage.
Exactly. And I'm so curious about why the Death Riders wanted to do this for Ospreay so much. I mean, was it just purely of let's not have him come after us anymore and just him join us or be under our tutelage as a way to persevere. I'm trying to understand why they want to help him win a title instead of helping one of their own.
I'm intrigued to see how that plays out in the Owen, because if they feel like this is the way we get to have Will Ospreay join the Death Riders, that's really cool. If they then feel betrayed by the fact that Will Ospreay doesn't, that's really interesting. But I think the whole thing with the Death Riders being like, for the love of the game is cool. The fact that the Owen is so short and only Claudio is in it is an interesting wrinkle. Because I feel like that could really enrich the story, or it could be just a base layer. So we will see. But there's somebody that I see in the chat, and that's Jesse Ozog. Hi, Jesse Ozog. Let's move along to, let's talk about the match with Ospreay and Ace Austin, because man, this was a blast to watch. Also, absolutely adore Will Ospreay winning with a flying armbar. I don't know if you guys know this about my wrestling proclivities, but a big fan of armbars in general. But also Will Ospreay winning with a submission kind of pays off a lot of what he's been like learning with the Death Riders here. But Ace Austin showing out. Not that that's hard to do against Will Ospreay, but some of these counters were so athletic. We had some handstand offense in here. Ospreay's Oscutter attempts. We got Kawada kicks in this. A really nasty hidden blade. And I love that the viciousness of Will Ospreay is brightly coming to life in this match. But Ace Austin has had now a couple of matches that were just kind of showcase matches where he's looked amazing in defeat. Like, he's looked fantastic in some of these. A lot of this is awesome chants for the crowd. That made me really happy to hear. Post-match, Samoa Joe goes, "You could have had a bye in this tournament because those are the kinds of things I do for my friends, but you chose the Death Riders over the Ops, and I'm not here to beat your ass, but I can't help if these fellas do." And then the Death Riders come out to run them off. So the Death Riders in Ospreay's corner firmly, which I think is interesting to kind of what Joe was saying before. And Samoa Joe is just the best. I anytime he's on my screen, I'm a happy gal. But great match. Love that Will Ospreay is the bell of the ball here. And we'll see what Joe and Will give us. Joe, we'll start with you on this, since Ryan's probably still spinning out over this spinoff from Big Bang Theory.
That was my notes too. Having the most impressive string of losses I've seen in a while.
Truly. He really is.
All the matches are great. He loses, but I don't feel like he loses anything because he's having these banger of matches with, you know, main event talent. So hopefully that pays off for him down the road, whether it's a single title, like a TNT title, or one of the other 500 belts they have.
Sure.
But yeah, I like Ospreay. I like the fact that he brought out the armbar. He brought out more of the, you know, stomping on the elbows and doing some other, you know, joint manipulation moves. Very Death Rider-esque. So, yeah, I wish his presentation was a little bit darker, a little more grittier.
But sure.
Other than that, yeah, I liked it.
Tim McFowell graciously offering to get pinned by Ace Austin. I taught him everything he knows about how to build your quads. So I leg day expert over here. But Ryan, are you in agreement with this? I feel like it's been a good thing when we've seen people showcased like this in losses, because wins have come after. Like, Kevin Knight was not the winningest guy when he came into the company. Swerve was not the winningest guy when he came into the company. But they started at the bottom, and now they're here, as the great Gandhi once said, I believe.
You should ask Ryan the question of who would Ace Austin be as a Big Bang Theory character?
Ooh, who would Ace Austin be as a Big Bang Theory?
I know Sheldon. I know Penny. I know the big three, Sheldon, Penny, and Leonard, and apparently there's a person named Stewart.
That's one more than I know.
He'd be Penny.
Okay.
I love his one-handed cartwheel. It's one of my favorite things.
Sure.
Yeah, you kind of took my talking point, which is you guys talking about all the losses, but this has been a well-established AEW method. You know, you mentioned a couple, but I look at someone like Queen Amanada, who lost a lot.
Yeah.
For even more than Kevin Knight or Swerve. I mean, she lost a lot. And ended up now she's where she, you know, before the injury and even now on her way back. Now she's back, you know, she's gets a lot of wins. There's a lot of back in the dark days, that was how it was for a lot of these people. They'd come in and they'd get their losses and suddenly they become stars. So I think this is just a matter of time before those losses become wins. Obviously, I think Ospreay was a perfect opponent for him because both of them kind of have an interesting similar style where you see both of them fly around, but now Ospreay is doing a bit more brawler and submission. And as he's showed off in this match, he's got some submissions in his bag and some, not submissions, I should say, some grappling in his bag. I have loved him with the Bang Bang Gang. So I think he's been a perfect fit. So everything about it works. And plus he's from Atlantic City. New Jersey boys.
That's fair.
Did you mute yourself, Pete?
No, I'm here. Am I here?
You're muted.
Hello?
I can't hear you. Joe, can I hear you?
I hear Kate.
I can't hear any of you?
Yeah, that's a you problem, pal.
Yeah.
I've lost you?
We are so lost.
I'm going to cry.
This is all because of that spinoff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where Ryan went, but everything... He turned it up
you guys
way too loud.
My headphones switched to the wrong headphones for no reason. And then came back full volume.
I was really hoping we were going to get a break from you there, but I guess your technical issues got figured out, as Will Ospreay's technical issues.
Why you
want
me to be like a bird and fly away?
I don't know where my home is. I don't know where my soul is.
Oh, I didn't know the next word, so thank you for taking that.
I had Nelly Furtado's album on CD for sure. That was in like my 6 CD changer on repeat there for a while.
I'm going to be honest with you. If you had given me 1,000 years to guess people you liked in high school, Nelly Furtado would not have been on that list.
I didn't like grow into, like, Binghamton did not have a lot of diversity in radio stations. So I did not like, my appreciation for music didn't really come into play probably until later in high school. And Nelly Furtado, I think, was a firm 7th, 8th grade situation. Plus my sister liked pop music. So it was just like, you just like, we shared CDs, whatever. It was like frequently on Star 105.7. So you just knew it. But Nelly Furtado's not bad. Promiscuous Girl is a great song. I don't care what anybody says.
I thought that was
Promiscuous Girl.
I didn't realize that was Nelly Furtado.
That was like the other song she had.
she's not one of my people.
Well, speaking of birds, can I interest you in a Nightingale versus Alex Windsor in the women's bracket of the Owen? We're also getting Hazuki versus Persephone, Sky Blue versus Sarai, and Mina Shirakawa versus Athena. Now, a couple things. Does this tip the hand that maybe Athena actually finally loses her ROH title this weekend? We will find out. Another possibility. Does Mercedes come back and take out Sky Blue and just gun for the title? Is something like Sky Blue feels very out of place in the rest of this bracket. And also, this has some hoopers in it. Don't get me wrong. I'm not mad about this bracket. But, like, anything but put your own women on TV, man. Like, this is so, like, with the talent rotation being so thin, like, I feel like everything is just a combination of the Brawling Birds, Tekla and her gals, Willow, and, like, they act like nobody else is on the roster. Like, it's really getting frustrating on the talent rotation side. However, these are some nasty matchups that I'm looking very forward to watching. I just feel like, how is anybody else supposed to buy a way onto TV if, like, even in their own tournaments, they're bringing out 1, 2, 3 people from the outside of an 8-person bracket? Like, that's tough. They should all be active in AEW if they're accessible, though. Certainly Sarai. Persephone's been unbelievable, and Hazuki is fantastic. So I'm intrigued to see what happens here. Sky Blue just feels very random, and I was like, I wonder if that's setting up a Mercedes return. But I also don't know if Mercedes comes back as a face or a heel, and I also don't know if maybe her fixation is the TBS championship. So we will find out. We will find out, but certainly on paper, this looks like an incredible bracket. My criticisms aside of that, like what they're actually giving us, if you focus on that versus what they're not giving us, is very, very good. Ryan, we'll start with you.
I love the bracket. I know what you're saying. Now, I will point out they didn't do this with the male, so it's a little annoying. But there is someone who said that this has a finals at Forbidden Door, so it does have a bit of a Forbidden Door feel to it.
It does.
They do have a deeper female roster than they use, and that is very annoying. I would say, if this would be the perfect way to have Athena lose her ROH title and then immediately come into AEW as a powerhouse, which is to win the Owen. Lose your title, win the Owen. You're already back.
I would not
full
be opposed to Tekla versus Athena at all. That sounds like an absolute blast. I also think there's a possibility that Mercedes isn't in this, but hot shots it, and you get Athena versus Mercedes before Tekla has a chance to even lose there. But we will see. I like your call on Athena winning, though. Like, come to the main roster, do something of importance right off the bat, I think is something that could be really special. Joe, your thoughts?
Well, I'm so pissed. Athena was my choice. I want Athena and Willow in the final, I think.
I think that's the... Unless they're going to do something really special with, like, Sarray or Persephone. Like, if they're going to be like, let's strap a rocket to them in a certain way, maybe. But I agree with you, Joe. Like, feels like Athena versus Willow happening on AEW television is going to be our finals here.
And I think I can see that setting up, like you said. Mercedes coming back. I think Mercedes back as a face. Especially the way she had gone out, losing all of her titles on the indies and all the, you know, fanfare she got and all her appreciation she showed. Her coming back and facing Athena when they were kind of, you know, partners for a while, that makes sense to me for a little bit of a long story, long-looking storytelling. So, yeah, I think this bracket is much more fun than the men's as far as maybe a little bit unpredictability. But like you said, we can make this bracket, you know, like the NCAA bracket, make it 76 teams, 76 women, and it'd be a lot more fun.
I kind of like that both brackets are so different. I'll say that. That, like, AEW is kind of a best of the best at the top of the AEW card in a way. And the women's one has a little more outside spice to it. It's kind of cool. It's kind of a cool way to go about stuff. But let's talk about our women's match that we got tonight. Tekla's just been so much fun. Like, this has been a blast. You have the Triangle of Madness, and this whole thing ending in a bunch of chaos. But battling Sheeta and the Brawling Birds, this was frantic, as you would expect. It ends in a DQ with Tekla just blasting Jamie Hayter with the... Jamie Hayter? Did I get that wrong? Was it Jamie Hayter? Who got blasted with the belt?
Not Jamie Hayter.
Jamie has a minor injury, right? Chris has an injury? Someone had a small injury.
I think that's right.
But Rosa, randomly, but cool, and Willow and Mina run down afterwards to kind of even the odds as this all takes place. I don't love that there's one women's match already. The idea that it ends in a non-finish is also kind of lame. Trios matches get more women on TV. I'm excited about that. But my God, it's like just the same women we see over and over and over and over again. Okay, Chris wasn't cleared due to injury. Thank you for helping me out with that. My mind was playing tricks on me as I was reading my notes. But I do like that... This is advancing things as we go into Double or Nothing, because, like, the Double or Nothing card was looking pretty thin. Like, we have not built to this pay-per-view the same way that we built to the other pay-per-views. So I like this at least makes sense going into the four-way. Tekla's been one of the most consistent performers they've had, I feel like, all year. She's been fantastic. I'll toss it up to you guys for your thoughts on this.
It took me a while to realize that was Thunder Rosa that ran out. I'm going to be honest with you.
Yeah, it was kind of random.
Yeah, I was like, wait, has she been in the storyline? I didn't think so, but okay. This was a very fun six-person tag match. Like, they're always clusterfucked, but in a good way. The triangle of why am I blanking on the third word?
Madness.
I had madness. I thought I must be quoting something wrong because I don't know why this wasn't working for me. They work really well together. Like,
they do.
They have, like, very cool triple team moves where, like, one point they had, I forget who it was in the corner, and they had, like, double tarantulas and stuff. Like, it was just really cool moves that they were pulling around. So they work.
Sheeta bailing was the other kind of subplot here, and I'm loving this two-faced version of Sheeta. I think it's so funny that she talks a bunch of shit in Japanese and then in English is a sweetheart to your face. Like, I think that's very fun.
the most fun Sheeta's been in. I mean, I know she was gone for a while, but this is a very fun way to bring Sheeta back, which is to give her a totally different character than we've ever seen.
Yes.
And considering how good she is in the ring, you giving her like a really good character, just what more could you want?
Yeah, this really works for her. She seems to just have such like a killer grasp on like every second that she's on screen with it. I think it's a lot of fun. Joe, what did you think of this wild six lady match here?
Now, just the only note I'll add that we haven't touched on so far is just the fact that I don't like when these matches go this long and good when we have that cheap DQ finish where you could have pinned Julia. I know you don't want to pin Scott and Fisher wins and Owen. You want to make her at least look like she is a threat, I guess, in the Owen. You could have pinned Julia somehow and been okay instead of having this whole locker room come out and send off these and
I agree with that. It's weird because it also feels like some of this feels like they are, are they building to a women's anarchy in the arena stadium stampede situation further down the line too? Like there's a lot of cooperative alliances with something else that I was thinking in all of this. But we'll see. We'll see what they have to bring. But Grant of Real Squared Circle says, "Hey, Mark Order Podcast. Hello, Grant of Real Squared Circle. I'm attending AEW Dynamite next week, but I know AEW has a history of not putting on the best go-home shows for pay-per-views. Do you think it'll end up being a good card?" Now, here's why I say yes. We don't have a ton of announces matched. Or matches announced. They're going to have to do some work on this go-home show to finalize some stuff. I also think in 2026, their go-home shows have been much more wrestling-focused than maybe previous years or other companies. Like, they've still been very wrestling heavy and not very yappy. So I think you're probably in decent luck. I hope you have so much fun. Live wrestling is the best. It's such a blast to go to. I hope you get a great card. Fellas, if there's anything you want to weigh in on that with that question.
No, I think you're right. Good. Yeah, the lack of announced matches, I think, definitely helps sway that favor.
Yeah, I think they are forced to, because I don't think they're going to announce, like, five matches on Collision. So, we'll see.
Although, they make Collision more must-watched. So.
They have been, and that, I think, is a healthy development, for sure. It's a lot of weeks, Collision is my favorite show, because it's also the format that is the most, like, hate-coded thing in the world. Like, it's more matches than any other show in the time block that it's in. There's usually more women's wrestling. The in-ring is usually, like, very clearly the focus. It's a lot of fun. And speaking of a lot of fun, we opened the show. We're taking it way back to the beginning. We've been jumping all over tonight. But we get this 10-man tag madness match. Which features the Young Bucks, Adam Copeland, Christian Cage, and Orange Cassidy, who defeat FTR, the Daugs, and Tommaso Ciampa in what has become, like, I don't love these 10-man tags, but they're fun to watch. They're always so inconsequential. But you have Christian low-blowing Wheeler in this, of course. Orange Cassidy putting Christian's hands in his pockets, which was a cute aspect in this. Triple super kicks, orange punches, and a spear finishing off Clark Connors here. Copeland accidentally spearing Dax Harwood before the babyfaces could, like, finally overwhelm Connors for the win. This was, you know, a usual fun 10-person tag match. I do hate that the Daugs lose so much, and I want more for Tommaso Ciampa, but I am intrigued about this alliance with FTR. Like, if this character arc is Tommaso Ciampa trying to find all these avenues to gold and he just goes crazy because none of them work, I'm very into that. But Tommaso Ciampa has been, like, such a home run signing since he's come over. There's every match he's had, there's been some spot that I'm like, holy shit, like, this guy goes when he goes. Like, he is been, for me, an absolute pleasure to watch under the AEW umbrella. But this was super fun. I love conglomerating. The conglomeration is at full strength. Again, we get a Mark Briscoe return later in the night. Willow is joined back up with this group as well. Ryan, this was well before you got thrown off by the Big Bang Theory universe.
The Big Bang Theory universe didn't throw me off until we sat down for the show and I saw it. And it has just screwed up my entire night.
I understand.
This was what we call a clusterfuck of a match. I just talked about the six, and I love it. I there's not a part. The dogs are awesome. They do some really cool stuff. Clark Connors is wild. He got suplexed out of the ring at one point, and it was just, he got caught, but it looked so cool. I want to speak more about my love of the conglomeration.
Sure.
I love that they're a group that comes together, then does nothing with each other for a bit, then comes back together, is the best way to be a group where, like, they don't have to always be involved in everyone's bullshit, but they're still a group. Like, that's the way it should be.
It feels, and I'll say it, a little like New Day Japan coded. Band.
Oh,
No. New Day coded thing. Because it's, I mean, it is also very New Japan. But New Japan is, like, by force of the nature of how they have to bring talent in and out more than anything, I think. The New Day, I feel like it was so groundbreaking on American television for them to not have nasty split-ups whenever one of them went on to single success, whatever. Two of them had tag titles. You didn't have someone just randomly like, I'm so jealous. Like, that at the time for American wrestling television was extremely rare. And I also function that way, Ryan. Like, I really like it when groups, because they're all supposed to be on the same side here, and it's such a default trope to go to, like, dissension, jealousy, whatever. It gets a little exhausting. So to have a group, especially when they're these guys, like, the silliest geese in the world, I agree with that. Like, I like the in-and-out success, and the name of the group is the conglomeration, you know what I mean? So, Joe, are you a fan of this kind of mentality, of this being a very, like, watery, fluid group, and what did you think of our 10-man that we got here?
Yeah, I think it's refreshing that way. I think it's probably more realistic to, you know, friend groups in our lives, right? Where we have friends that were from 3 years ago, but we can kind of float in and out of each other's lives, like, you know, no past. So like the fact that it's a little bit more realistic that way. The 10-man match was your simple 10-man match. It was, you know, Bucks looking really strong at the beginning, you know, the heels coming back, had the everyone just in their finisher at the end. And the only thing I'm always curious is to see, like, which side they're going to make look less cohesive. Like, tonight it was just have the heels inadvertently keep hitting each other or, you know, get pushed into each other. It was fun, but it's not my kind of match.
It is hard to say, like the Young Bucks always just show out in these, because the thing with the 10-man is, like, everybody's a hot tag, which that part makes it really fun. And I feel like both of the Young Bucks are really great hot tags. So whenever you just tag them in, it becomes such a blast with them. So I think we're all on the same page as far as this maybe not being the, like, most substantive, or maybe it's a fatigued trope to do these 10-man tags. But anytime I watch one of them, I was like, but man, the Young Bucks are so much fun to watch. We get some Stadium Stampede developments or Anarchy in the Arena developments or whatever we're getting. Mark Davis, Andrade, and the Dogs all align, which is a pretty badass group, I gotta say. That's a fun way to go about business, is with all those guys on the same side of things. And we also have a speedball squash on tonight's show. He destroys an enhancement talent in Westbrook with the Ultimo Weapon. And then we'll talk about Kevin Knight and him retaining his TNT title in just a minute. But if you guys can just chime in on either of those, I think that was in total probably 2 minutes of television, both the match and the alignment.
Well, I like what they're doing. I like the fact they're building him up really quick again, kind of similar to what they were doing with Kevin Knight. It wasn't the match wasn't for me with him and the you know the enhancement path there, only because it made me dizzy. Like the
sure.
minute and a half he was, there's a lot flipping around.
There was, but, yeah, it's a little nauseating. It's like when you go on the when you're on the boardwalk and it's like that one where you're inside that spaceship looking thing and it slides up the wall and stuff. Yeah, it gets very spinny and dizzy. I get that.
I get Speedball himself been on his roll now. He's been stacking wins, and now he's calling out, he wants a world title shot. And I'm thinking to myself, but your buddy right here has a title, and he has an open challenge like every week. You can just, do a handshake title shot. But
I think that's what we're getting at, though. I think we're trying to – he doesn't want to take this away from his close friend, but I feel like Kevin Knight has been – he's just like on this silver platter to turn heel on Speedball, because I think Speedball is maybe the most pure Ricky the Dragon Steamboat-esque babyface that we have had in a long time. There are very few faces that are interesting and not made to look really dumb without having to have these like contentious layers. Speedball is just over because everybody likes Speedball and because he kicks ass in the ring. Like with this charm that is like intangible, but Joey, I think you're hitting the nail on the head of the story that they're trying to get around of like maybe inevitably Speedball has to face him. You know what I mean?
But that's why I want Speedball to turn heel, because it's such a pure face. I think it'd be interesting to have him be the unexcused guy, kind of like a not quite the same, but in the same level playing field of how Sami Zayn sometimes can play a good guy.
Okay. Yeah.
On the heel. I think he's, Speedball doing that
Speedball
character,
but like,
even more like, gee golly, I'm a, happy-go-lucky face.
Sure. I don't hate that at all. I don't think they'll do it, because I think you make a lot of money when you just ride the ride of the white-hot baby face kind of thing, or like, just the people that everybody loves, but I like where your head's at. I like where your head's at a lot. Ryan, your thoughts on this alignment between Andrade and the Dogs and Mark Davis, and also our Speedball squash moment?
Well, Andrade's in a weird spot because I think, like we've talked about this before, he got such a good response on his return, even more than I think they anticipated, that they're kind of like, we didn't really have plans. We had plans for you, but not at the level we want to now have them. So we have to kind of keep fitting you in things until that moment opens up. It is what it is. It's not my favorite thing. I love Joe's idea of people all turning heel, except it feels to me like it would be an awesome moment, but after that it would fall apart because I just don't know if he's a believable heel. Obviously, I could be wrong, but...
Him getting booed by the crowd does genuinely seem like an obstacle, because people just love cheering for this guy, and I feel like Kevin Knight is so cool that sometimes, like, by de facto of him being the cool guy, you almost are like, well, then he's the cool jerk, you know what I mean? Like, I think it's very easy to just fall into that. As far as Andrade, yeah, it's interesting because obviously him and Max are like continuing to kick the can down the road for whatever inevitable match they have. It's also, he seems so not a part of the Don Callis family, because I'm all for Andrade having matches with literally everybody in that faction. So if that's the way they choose to go, they've kind of been hinting at it. But yeah, it's the blessing and the curse of so many people having their eyes on the top prize. It's made for a very interesting world title scene in the first half of 2026 here. But it is a little challenging because it's like, okay, well, with the guys who don't win, where do they go next, right? Like, they had a really good answer for that with Brody King. Andrade never quite got to the title shot moment, but he's hovering around that in the same way. But let's talk Kevin Knight retaining this TNT title. He successfully defends it against a returning Brian Cage in what was a very hard-hitting match, as you would expect with a Brian Cage return. He catches Kevin Knight multiple times midair, which is always like the bonafide strong guy move, I think. There's a really brutal springboard suplex in this that made me like catch my breath for a second in here. And Knight kind of just surviving the powerhouse offense and hitting the UFO splash for the win. And then afterward is when we get the Mike Bailey announcement that he wants a world title shot after Double or Nothing. This makes me feel like perhaps...
Natural Woman.
Well, no. This makes me think the title's going to end up on Kenny Omega sooner than later. Because there's been like this kinship with Mike Bailey. Like, I think MJF might win it and then lose it the next week or something. And you set up like Kenny Ospreay for Wembley or something like that. Because Speedball calling his shots and them having had that kinship earlier in the year definitely intrigues me. And I was like, oh, I wonder if that's where we're going with this. Maybe not. I could be wrong. But it is an interesting possibility. This match was really, really fun. Brian Cage is back. Good for him. He was out with some nasty, nasty injury stuff. He's been kind of plagued by that, unfortunately, in a lot of this AEW run. But Ryan, we'll start with you. What did you think of all of this?
It's an interesting idea that Kenny Omega could have it. I think what's going to happen is that we go back to the Speedball Kevin Knight thing. I think Speedball's not going to get either win or get a shot at those other titles. And there's going to be this tension that he's not asking Kevin Knight for a shot, but Kevin Knight also won't offer it. And it kind of forms a tension.
I like that. I'm not mad about that.
And then the match itself, Brian Cage kind of looks like Jake something now or whatever Jake's.
With the beard and the, Jake Doyle, I think.
Jake Doyle. But
yeah.
I mean, I'm glad. Good for him that he's back. I'm glad to see him back. He was kind of a fun. I kind of liked what they were doing with him and Lance Archer before he got hurt. I liked the big beefy teams. It's just, but the only problem I have with it is just another giant guy in the Callis family. Like, guys,
yeah.
We really need to cut down the size of the Callis family.
Well, it feels like it's imploding. So maybe there just won't be one because all of the heavy hitters seem to be at odds with each other, and Kyle Fletcher is injured, so we will see what happens there. We do have Jack Perry firing back.
Joe, you don't get an opinion.
Oh, I'm sorry, Joe. I've been so much better about that these days, too, but it was like a classic Kate trope of just like getting one person's opinion and then moving on. I've been so much better. Joe, I did not mean to leave you out. If I was going to leave anybody out intentionally, it would be Ryan. I'd hope you know that by now. I'm sorry. Your thoughts on this?
No, other than, they really reintroduced Brian Cage pretty well in this match. He dominated probably 80% of the match, I felt like. And kudos to him for helping save that finish of where it looked like Kevin Knight kind of slipped a little bit and didn't quite get his legs wrapped around the head and the turnbuckle there, and Brian Cage just pretty much deadlifted him up, back up to him.
Okay. That's pretty wild.
Other than that, the only thing I had was that this match felt very similar to our main event we'll talk about as far as the format of one person dominating most of the match, and that one person being a Don Callis family member, not me too.
That's a very fair point, and we're going to talk about that in just a second, and I will get both of your opinions. But we real quick, we'll stop by this Jack Perry promo where he fires back at Mark Davis saying that he promises to smash every blunt object over him at Double or Nothing, and if you don't like that, fuck you, which gave me, if you don't chew big red, fuck you vibes from Talladega Nights, if anybody remembers that gem. Keep that bookmark, because I'm also going to tie just the loose end of this main event here up, especially since Joe made that great call that this is a little bit similar format-wise to the match that we just talked about. But Darby Allin retains against Konosuke Takeshita. I'm so impressed by Takeshita in so many ways. But, like, he now has really delivered with Darby Allin in an impressive way. And I don't think he had, like, a ton of experience with guys like Darby. Like, I can't think of people certainly smaller guys, but like I don't know if there's anybody like Darby in the other places that he's worked. And they have a really, really, really natural chemistry. Takeshita just ragdolling him with these Germans and these knees, the blue thunder bomb on the floor, Darby countering destroyers and coffin drops and all sorts of stuff. Takeshita refusing MJF's dynamite ring with Don Callis interfering, which was an important aspect to this. And we get Darby reversing the raging fire on the stairs into a scorpion death lock, which was an incredibly impressive spot, and two coffin drops to seal the deal for Darby. This was a war. I think this was an important match in the story that they're telling with Darby of he's just going to be too beaten down by the time he gets to MJF. It's double or nothing. Like, this is going to end up taking its toll. But I thought this was incredibly impressive. Joe, we'll start with you since I unintentionally ostracized you on the last one. Any thoughts on this quick Jack Perry stop that we made here and your thoughts on the main event tonight?
I don't know if I love Jack Perry face promos. I feel like you're still like, I don't know. His promos were so, I felt like were less but more impactful. His face ones just don't hit the same for me. But
I think they can't decide, like, he's a little bit too happy-go-lucky. Like, they have this comedic aspect to it, and then they also have this sincere baby face aspect to it, and it feels like they're almost non-committal as to what kind of face he is. That's my kind of vibe with that, if I'm in your camp with it. Like, that's where it loses me a little bit.
The main event, though, I mean, God, they're getting a lot of mileage, like, all the mileage you can get on this short, what we perceive as a short Darby title reign with him just having his matches week after week. But that German suplex off the top rope that he held on to for the pin, that Takeshita held on to the pin, that was gnarly. I like the continuation of, you know, them showing Takeshita evolving as, you know, being so much different than Okada as far as wanting to, you know, win with honor or lose with honor. I don't know what to do with that match with him or Okada. I'm guessing Takeshita wins, but if he doesn't, that's going to be fun too. So
I feel like this Okada title reign has been 900 years long, and I'm ready for Takeshita to dethrone him. I also think that's just such a nice passing of the torch moment. In a sincere way. Like, I think that could be really cool of what that could do for and to Takeshita. It would be nice if any of the three promotions that have Takeshita in their employ wanted to book him at not a glacial pace and to do something cool. But Ryan, your thoughts on Takeshita joining the cast of the Big Bang Theory spinoff?
I might watch that. If you put the catch on there, you're going to get at least one episode watch out of me. I mean, I'm not going to
huge ratings bump.
Yeah, I'm not going to watch all of them, but you might get one out of me. The match was, listen, when you have Takeshita in a match, it's going to be good, and Darby can fly around, and Takeshita's very good at making Darby fly around. This has to be a short Darby reign. Otherwise, they'll have already burnt through all the interesting things, like, right off the bat. So if it's not, we're in trouble. As for Takeshita and all that, yeah, I'm beyond the point of enjoying the slow burn. We've now hit the finish it or just move on. Like, I really like him. I like the story in general, but
it feels like the Fletcher injury kicked this even further down the line, and it was long in the tooth to begin with.
Yeah. It sucks that the Fletcher injury did that, but you can't, like, at this point, it's like, guys, we just got to let it end. Like, move on, have him break away from Callis, like, this is helping no one. It's just, he has to keep taking losses, which are not fun. No one's moving forward. The Callis family keeps growing by guy after guy. it's not my cup of tea, I guess you could say. But he does put on awesome matches. So at least they're making having him wrestle, and I get to see him have awesome matches. I just want him to see him have that awesome match against Okada, and then
yeah. I don't know what that. I don't think it was Fightful that reported it, but I saw something that he like kind of urgently had to go back to Japan. So I don't know what the deal is with that, because this was originally supposed to be Okada's match. So I don't know how much further this is going to be slowed down. But it was a hell of a main event. Those two have incredible in-ring chemistry. Both times that they met, it's been really, really fun. And it's been a really, really fun night here at the Mark Order Podcast. We've had Ryan. We've had Joe. We've had me. We've had the rare full house of the Mark Order in style. We've had wonderful people joining us in the chat the whole night. Mike Peterson joining us a little bit later. Timothy Drake joining us a little bit later. 1LT Photo. I'm going to go back and look specifically for your sign because I didn't catch it the first time. But I will see if anybody else did. And if not, I'll at least give it an honest look for it. But thank you for hanging out with us on Wednesdays. We have so much fun together. Ryan, where can the people find you?
Find me on all our socials. At Mark Order Pod. You can watch my history YouTube at Here for History or at underscore Here for History on Twitter and Here for History elsewhere. I have a bunch of old ones, so go watch the old ones. New ones will be coming out sooner rather than later. I had a lot of other stuff I had to take care of, but now I'm going to try to get some, I'm going to try to backlog a bunch so that I can just release them when things get busy again. So yeah, that's where you can follow me. What about Joe? Where can we find Joe?
Oh, Joe. You can find me at UnderscoreAsianJoe on social medias. My quest to find new weird cereal continues because I'm getting desperate. I made a box of random generic Fruit Loops from Aldi that looks like vegetables. It tastes good. It's very unappealing.
Interesting.
No, I'm desperate. I'm desperate.
Definitely send some Joe's way because we don't want him having an episode of Veggie Tales where he's eating veggie straws with milk. That sounds awful. So we don't want that. But you can find me at Fightful, at Miss Kate Fabe on my own YouTube channel. That's getting a rebrand. It's now going to be On the Outside. We're going to do a lot of fun stuff, but I'm in a place with reliable internet. My lungs are working. I used to pray for times like these. We're going to be doing a ton of fun stuff. There's going to be wrestling. There's going to be battle bots. There's going to be music. There's going to be baseball. There's going to be all sorts of stuff. It was very important to me to get in gear by my birthday. My birthday is tomorrow. Thank you for the early birthday shout outs in the chat. I see you. I appreciate you. I appreciate the support you've shown me all this time. But my handle over there is still Miss Kate Fabe. The display name has just changed. So you can follow me everywhere at Miss Kate Fabe. You could also follow me on Instagram. And I've been doing some content with cute little outfits, which has been really fun. So you can check those out.
I'm going to start doing myself, guys. Everyone just follow me for my cute little
follow outfit. Follow Ryan. He's got some great floral dresses for spring. He looks great. We're so excited to see the backless number that he has coming up. So follow Ryan.
Where the office Kate wears, and you can figure out who wears it better.
Yeah, bitch stole my look style. Yes.
Joe, if I could find the office Kate wore in my size, I might do that for one or two.
No, not in your size is so much better. Are you kidding?
No.
I got this little romper that's long-sleeved and shorts that's connected. That would be great on you.
I then can't get them on. I mean, that's the problem there.
Thank you for hanging out with us tonight. We will see you next week for the go home to Double or Nothing. We say goodbye and good night.
And Ryan goes, he puts the outro card up and he scrolls down and he finds outro. We'll be right back.
This concludes the Mark Order Podcast. We now return you to your...